Hi, everybody. It's Susie Singer-Carter, and I just wanted to take a minute to tell you about a wonderful product I just discovered. It's called Sociavi. And Sociavi in Latin means to share and unite. It is the simplest way for older adults and people with disabilities to connect and engage with their family and friends. There's no username, no password, no login, and no app to choose from. It's just a dedicated device. It's the Sociavi C2M Connect to Me device that's always on and ready to use. And families and caregivers just install the app on their smartphone, and then you can just begin sending photos, videos, and even have live-to-live video chats. And your loved ones, they don't have to do anything. They just love it. And because all of us must fight elder abuse and work together to bring awareness to this issue, Sociavi is supporting my efforts to produce my vital documentary, No Country for Old People. When you subscribe to Sociavi for your loved ones, they will donate the payments received and you can help us reach our goal while connecting with your loved ones in the simplest way. Sociavi, connecting generations made simple globally. To learn more, please visit their website at www.sociavi.com. And when choosing the payments, select the annual subscription. The proceeds will go to help the production of our documentary, No Country for Old People, and I thank you so much.
When the world has got you down, and
Alzheimer's sucks. It's an equal opportunity disease that chips away at everything we hold dear. And to date, there's no cure. So until there is, we continue to fight with the most powerful tool in our arsenal, love. This is Love Conquers Alls, a real and really positive podcast that takes a deep dive into everything Alzheimer's, the good, the bad, and everything in between.
And now, here are your hosts, Susie Singer-Carter and me, Don Preece.
Good morning, everybody. This is Susie Singer-Carter.
And this is Don Preece, and this is Love Conquers Alls. Hello, Susan.
Donald, I'm wearing clothes today.
They're quite fashionable. I must say.
I'm a fashionista.
They're delightful.
I'm wearing a denim ensemble for those of you not looking and on the YouTube. But you should, because
you should.
I forgot it's how to dress great. Anymore. It's been like it's been 3 years since the pandemic.
I know. That's right. March. Mm-hmm. March of 2020. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's
3 years. 3 years.
Wow.
I'm just getting my high heel legs back.
Thank God. You know.
Right?
Exactly. I mean.
Because my calves, where am I without my high heels? My calves don't know what to do.
I don't even know you without calves. So
it's time
to get them back.
I don't know me either. But here's some good. This is one of the reasons why I'm practicing my high heels is because our other podcast, I Love Lucifer, was nominated for Best Audio Fiction by Indie Series Awards, and we're going to a red carpet black tie event on April 12th. So everybody, send us good vibes because poor I Love Lucifer that we love so much has taken a backseat to my attention. But lo and behold, it's the little podcast that could.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's something that, you know, because both of our podcasts have love in it. I'm trying to draw a correlation, but I can't.
You can't.
All I can say is, no, I can't. My brain right now is not functioning. So I'm going to say very silly things today.
Right. Well, let me talk for you then.
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. Please do.
So Don is working. He's just delivering a beast of a project. It's the documentary on the 30-year anniversary of Jack Warner from Warner Studios.
Well, yeah. It's a 100-year anniversary of Warner Brothers. And it's a reimagining of a documentary we did 30 years ago. So it's crazy, around the clock, you know, no days off, 14 hours a day, and which is exactly Susie's schedule as preparing for our upcoming documentary, No Country for Old People, which we're still trying to raise money. You know, if anyone has any spare cash laying around, please feel free to give a tax-deductible donation to No Country for Old People, because we need to get this thing done. It's so important.
We've already interviewed over 60 experts and caregivers. We're going to move the needle for sure, Donald. That's what we're going to do.
Absolutely.
And we have to do it because our long-term care industry, and that's what it is, it's an industry, is out of control and it's broken and it's feeding, you know, very rich people's pockets and making them even richer. So, which is interesting because our guests are sort of like Saturday Night Live now. We have like returning guests like hosts, right? So, we have a three-timer now. He's going to have to get a jacket for him.
Yeah, he's our first three-timer for sure.
Yeah, just yeah.
Setting records.
Exactly, as he does. But, you know, what he's going to talk about today is going to be so great because it's about... It's assisted living, but it's really the transition of lifestyle and how important that lifestyle is and the quality of that lifestyle is, no matter what cognitive level you're at, if you're dealing with cognitive impairment or just aging in general. It's so important, you know, that we have a quality in our life as we grow older. You know, we have so much technology that's extending our life and giving us an opportunity to have a longer life and experience more things. And yet we don't have an infrastructure set up to support that. So that's why we need to get out there and really galvanize the public and get them to come. All of us need to really voice it because otherwise it's just going to stay the way it is.
Yeah.
And I mean, Russell Brand on Bill Maher on March 3rd, you guys, if you haven't seen it, go back and watch it because he says it as only Russell Brand can. So I was applauding in my living room last night. So anyway, why don't you...
She was so loud.
Well, I was so excited. Well, because he just says it so right. He just says it and he has no shame.
Absolutely.
He has no shame in the game. I love it. Anyway, okay, so what? Let's introduce our guest that we love so much.
I will. Our guest today is living a remarkable journey. Anthony Copeland Parker and his beautiful wife, Catherine, were in their 50s when they found out that he needed a heart valve replacement and she was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. With a history as endurance athletes, their reaction to this news was nothing less than extraordinary. They retired from their jobs, sold their home, and became nomads, running marathons and half marathons all over the world. Their book, Running All Over the World, Our Race Against Early Onset Alzheimer's, is a nonfiction account of their years of flying, running, walking, sailing, and sightseeing from Atlanta to Antarctica and back again. Now, their life has entered a new and incredible chapter, and we cannot wait to turn the page and learn more. So, without further ado, in a triple Encore appearance, let's say hello to the inimitable Anthony, though we like to call him Tony Copeland Parker. Hello, Tony.
Hello. How are you all doing?
There he is.
I did not realize that I was a third-timer here, but that is fabulous. I really appreciate you having me here, and when I was... going back around, you and Susie were the first ones I contacted to make sure that we got to talk.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And you better have. No, I'm kidding. Well, thank you. No, we love you too. We love you. And we love Catherine. And I love your story. And of course, I listened to your book because that's how I roll. I love a good audio. And it is a good audio. It's like it is really good. First of all, the book's good and the audio is good. It's so enjoyable. It's like Obama's reading to you. It is like it is wonderful. And it's such a lovely book because it's first of all, it's so atypical from any book you've ever read about Alzheimer's, any journal, any chronicle, because first of all, they're unique, traveling all over the world, you know, with someone with, you know, early onset. But you're really experiencing, Tony, you have such a good way of explaining, of describing, I don't know how you did it, but you described so much of the travel down to such detail that I felt like I went with you.
Well, that's
everywhere.
That's good. That was my purpose. Yeah. I wanted people to travel with us as we picked up our suitcases and went from hotel to cruise ship to airplane every 3 to 4 days for what turned out to be 8 years.
It's amazing. It wow. really is good. I really enjoyed it because I'm not that person that likes to read travel books. I want to go, but you took me during COVID to all these places, right? So it was in really detail. It was so fleshed out, and I felt like I was tasting the food even that you were describing, you know, so it was really good. I really appreciated that. And then, of course, your journey with Catherine and which was nothing less than, I don't mean this in a flippant way, heroic. And I say that because I know what it takes. I love my mom dearly, like you love Catherine. It still doesn't make it easier. Hold on 1 second. It's really noisy. Much better.
Much better.
I said it was heroic. I say you're heroic because even though you were all in and you leaned in as far as you could go, it doesn't make it easier. It's a hard role to take as a caregiver. And what you did was so beautiful, and I know you enjoyed it all, of course, all the way, but still not everyone can do that. Let's just put it that way.
Well, one of the things that I looked for was trying to figure out what Catherine and I both enjoy doing. And that in turn made it a lot easier for me to navigate through the trials and tribulations of someone with early onset Alzheimer's. The other thing is that the travel agents industry is very caring, and they helped out a whole lot, from hotels to airlines to airports and all that, navigating. And then also there was a number of groups that we traveled with that knew of our situation, and they would assist us whenever possible. So I had those things going for us. The fact that I love managing and I enjoy doing what I was doing made it a lot more better. And the fact that I was trying to find joy, you know, everywhere we turned, every place we went, we were trying to find something that would add to our experience.
Well, you did that. I know that because I've had the pleasure of hanging with you and Kat. And I know how joyful she is. You can feel her joy with you. You know, she's just a joyful human being, and like my mom. And that's a lot to do with your support of her, right? So she feels safe, and she feels heard, and she feels valued. And so that makes a huge difference.
Yes, it does. Right? Absolutely. And that's one of the things that people often comment about her. Even in her stage of Alzheimer's, they can still see that come out of her when they meet her.
And I think that's so much because of what, you know, the way you handled it, as opposed to just saying, okay, we're now going to just hunker in and deal with this and, you know, sit in a room and everything. You expanded her mind constantly, and her experience and her heart. It's something to, even though people aren't going to model what you did as far as going out and running marathons all around the world, but it's showing how, you know, new stimulation, new things coming in can really, you know, I think it does. It changes not only the mind, but the heart too. Is that something you found?
Well, what they say is that early stages of Alzheimer's, things long. So the first memory senses that are affected are your short-term memory. And then you can have those type of situations. Like, for example, having dinner at the Eiffel Tower. You know, those were a long-term memory. And then me writing a book about it and the pictures that went along with it. And then as you were talking about the audiobook, we listened to that from time to time. And that, you know, reinforces, you know, a memory that she had, and also just makes her day a little bit better.
Isn't that a great thing? And isn't that sweet? Like, if you're not a writer like Tony, and you don't have, you know, that's not something in your wheel, in your bucket list, or in, you know, but you could still, like, I made a picture book for my mom, you know, on back in the day on Apple, you know, and I did like the story of my mom in pictures and text. But now you could do something where you can read along with it. They have those kinds of books. They do it for children, right? You could do that for your loved one where they can hear it spoken out loud, which is nice because it's your voice. You get, then it's recognizable. I mean, there's all kinds of ways if you can't be with your loved one every day, like you could, right? So you could do things like that. I mean, that's a great example of why it's so impactful. And I mirror it again with my mom, because the year that she lived with me and I moved her into this complex that was a live work complex. I thought, oh my God, what am I doing? She's going to drive everybody else crazy because people don't know Alzheimer's. I was so wrong. Like, everybody loved her. Everybody supported her. Everybody just surpassed my expectations of humanity. So there is community out there, and it was so healthy for my mom. She felt, alive. She felt like she had a community, and she felt like she had a purpose.
And there was stimulation. I mean, it's not like, I think sometimes caregivers want to isolate due to their own embarrassment and just because it's, they don't want to have, they don't want that behavior on other people and everything. And it's just, no, the isolation is what, that's what's going to kill somebody. It's exposing them to life, which is what you did, both of you did. I think it's important to know this, because I think that's the natural reaction is when I'm just going to put them there, I'll deal with them, but I don't want the world to deal with them or them to deal with the world.
Well, I don't know if that, I mean, I think that's changing a little bit, Don. I just think people don't know. Not everybody, but new people that are just first dealing with it. But I'm so interested in what's happening in your life, Tony, now, because now you've transitioned from traveling, because Kat's disease has progressed and it's healthier for her now to be more in one place. And now she's in an assisted living facility lately. And Tony's moved in with his wife there, which is extraordinary. I have not heard of this from anybody else. I'm sure you're not the only one, but I think it's fascinating because your cognitive abilities are intact and you're there watching how this all plays out. So, A, how did you make that choice? Why did you make that choice? And what have been, here's all the big questions. What has been advantageous about it? What have you liked about it? And what has been the hardest challenges? And I will repeat that again.
Well, what ended up happening was about a year ago, we did our last international flight. We went over to Berlin and Scotland, and we did some races over there. So that was a year ago, October. Unfortunately, right after that, she started having seizures, which required us to take some medication and go through a lot of different testing for that. So that kind of knocked the legs out from under her. As a matter of fact, she can no longer run because of that. And then the sheer going overseas, the 9-hour flight, the change of time zones and all that was just going to be too much for her. So I was looking at, we're not going to be able to travel the world anymore, but we still enjoy traveling. She can still travel. We just came back from Indiana. She gets on airplanes, goes through security, all that. They look at me, they look at her, they know something's up, and they assist us right on through, like we're, rock stars, as a matter of fact. It is, first class, and, everything's taken care of for us. And during that period of time, I started looking at, so where are we going to settle down? And I went through an actual 3-month look at and asking people that have their folks, their parents in assisted living or independent living or memory care situations, and try to figure out what would be best for us. There are 3 levels, independent living, which is actually what we're doing, assisted living, and then also memory care. And as we were going through this process, most people end up somewhere near a relative. So, you go say, okay, my son lives here, her daughter lives there, where should we move to? The other thing was the fact that we were still traveling, so I wanted to be close to a major airport. So we picked Atlanta in the first place so we could travel in and out and use it as a hub for us. So we figured Atlanta would be good. So we started looking in the Atlanta area. And we're here in a facility called Brookdale Senior Living Solutions in Riswell, Georgia. It's probably one of the biggest facilities I've ever run across. There's actually right now 285 people under roof, and then they have another 20 beds for assisted living, and then they have another separate facility for another 20 folks for memory care. Of course, when we first came here, the management here was like, oh, okay, Catherine's got Alzheimer's, so we need to put her in memory care, and then you can come visit. So you can get an apartment somewhere, or you can go to independent living. But, you know, having her in independent living is just not going to work. We don't do that. And I explained to them that you telling me we don't do that is not a good answer. As you can tell from my lifestyle, you know, running all over the world and going from place to place as nomads, you know, I think outside the box. And I knew that the best situation for both of us, since, like you said, I have all my faculties and I'm, you know, 67 years old, but I'm still running and I'm in pretty good shape, that I could be able to be in a position to take very good care of her here. The things I like about this facility is the fact that it has about 2 miles of carpeted corridors indoors. So we basically can walk out our door. It is raining and snowing, whatever, or sleeting outside, and stay indoors and walk 2 miles without ever, you know, seeing the same door, you know, again. Everybody decorates their doorways, you know, depending on the holidays for Christmas and Easter and the like. And then there's a half mile sidewalks. It's a off the main drag in terms of the where it's located. And you have trees, you have landscaping. There's a neighborhood right behind us that we could go walk another 3 miles. So a half mile around the facility, another 3 miles behind the facility, 2 miles indoors. And Catherine right now, she's in what I refer to as stage six, as if you go through the 7 stages of Alzheimer's. The last one being bedridden. I basically do everything for her, but she can still walk. So she puts in 6 to 8 miles a day of walking, and we have all sorts of places that we can walk here and walk in the nearby neighborhood. The other thing is that they have an agency inside, which is called Brookdale at Home, and someone's with her now, and they're outdoors walking around while we do this interview. And I found 2 other individuals that come in 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week, to help out in the morning. So we get up, we have our breakfast, someone comes and they go walking with Catherine. She's, you know, loves it. And then I can get some things done and go for a run, take care of myself, do some me things. So it turned out to be a fabulous situation. You mentioned what was the hardest thing. I would think trying to convince the management here that this is where we needed to be. And they have agreed that I was right and that this is something that is very encouraging to others. Unfortunately, it's not for everybody, because in some cases, like if you're an older woman and your husband has Alzheimer's and he can be somewhat combative, then of course you have to look at a situation where you're not able to actually take care of him yourself. And I've had some conversations with individuals that are here that had that situation and wish that, you know, they had the ability to take care of their loved one. But I do have some folks that are here staying in independent living, and then I can see them walking across the street, you know, right across the sidewalk to see their loved one in the memory care
situation.
You had a few other challenges in the beginning, right? Like that you had to source out. Do you want to talk about those or should we not?
Well, yeah, the other challenges that we had were, I found that there were some individuals that were more used to folks that had physical disabilities as opposed to mental disabilities. And they always felt that those individuals needed to be separate from the general population, as you would put it. And I think that they've come to realize that, you know, maybe they just didn't know moving through this, that this is something that could benefit everyone. Most of the individuals here are single. You know, they lost their loved one. There's only probably, you know, less than one-tenth of the population are couples. And they, you know, kind of look at us walking hand in hand through the hallways, seeing the love and care that I have for Catherine and all. And they stop us and tell us that how glad they are with us being here. The other situation was that there was some folks that now that Catherine's at the stage that she's at, you know, like I said, I need to do pretty much everything for her, which includes feeding her. And they weren't very comfortable watching that take place. But me, the type of person who always tries to figure out the best over whatever is thrown my way, and it turns out you get two meals a day here, and breakfast and or lunch and dinner. So what I do is I order just about everything off the dinner menu, and then make lunch out of it for the next day. So even though we're in our apartment, we come in, I bring the food, we sit down, 30 minutes later, we're back out, you know, walking around and seeing the sights. So it turned out to be to our advantage with the situation. So I made, once again, lemonade out of lemons.
That's awesome. And what you're also doing that's great is you're modeling, you know, you're showing, you're taking away a lot of the bias about ableism. You know, there's a lot of ableism that exists within our culture, and we don't want to see it. We're in denial. We don't like it. It offends. There's a laundry list of things that it does, right? It frightens people, and so on and so forth. And that's because we've continued to shield ourselves from it, and we have hidden away people with any kind of mental deficiency, whether it's autism or schizophrenia, whatever it is, and we don't want to look at it, and we marginalize those people. We don't assign any value to them. So what you're doing is a really important thing, because there's ageism, for one, and then you add on something like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or any mental illness, and now you've got two strikes against you. Now you're doubly not worthwhile. So, you know, and what you're doing, modeling by your actions. Already you can see people embracing that and saying, I wish I could do that. Because you're changing the paradigm.
Actually, I've taken it a step further. And as you know, pointed out that I do have a book. And what I've done is I keep replenishing a copy of the book in the library here. And so, you know, folks know, oh, there's another book. So they go pick it up. And as we're walking around, somebody will stop us and say, I'm reading your book today. You know, then I'm going to pass it on to Jill. And then I got it from Artie and, you know, I got it from the library. So, you know, we're celebrities here. And we're also giving them the opportunity to read about what we actually did in terms of finding joy,
right,
through this diagnosis. And for Catherine, was diagnosed in April 9 years ago, and I knew something was wrong a year prior. So we're coming up on 10 years of going through this. A lot of research on my part. Right now I'm doing some research on seizures, and I write to a blog, runningwithcat.com, and I update it probably every couple of weeks. And the one I'm working on right now is talking about proper hydration for folks with Alzheimer's and also for folks with seizures. And I've seen some improvements in terms of spacing the seizures out by keeping Catherine properly hydrated, and try to pass on that information to as many people as possible through my writing. And also, I swore I was never going to do it, but I am working on a second book. But that's down the road sometime.
You crazy guy. That's great, though. You're a good writer. Can you tell me and the audience what my mom didn't have seizures. What brings about these seizures? Is that part of the Alzheimer's?
Well, there's all sorts of different types of seizures. There are some called absence seizures, which actually some people, they think is the beginning part of early onset Alzheimer's, is the fact that, or Alzheimer's for that, they just kind of stare off into space for a period of time. Well, they actually are having a seizure, but they're not going through all the convulsions and the like that you normally would associate with seizures, like epilepsy, things of that nature. What Catherine has is a type where her brain, when she's waking up, is going through the waking process and a dreaming process, and it's just kind of fritzing out. And she usually has them upon waking. Now, if she has one in the morning when she wakes up, then she's more susceptible to have another one sometime during the day. You know, the brain is trying to recalibrate, as it were. So what I'm looking at is the fact that there's a lot of studies talking about hydration and how that affects the brain, how your brain actually has to work harder if you're dehydrated, and then that extra work that you're going through puts a strain on your brain, and such, so that you end up having a seizure. The seizures that she has usually only last about 30 seconds to a minute. Normally, she's still in bed. She does have convulsions, and then normally that day is ruined. You know, there's nothing we can do for that day or 2 days. It really knocks her down and puts her behind the curve. As I've mentioned one time before, is that her decline is like a sine wave. Some days are better than other days. And then when she has a seizure, it's really a downhill for her for a period of time, sometimes a week or two. So I can't keep them totally gone, but what I'm trying to do is just space them out over time. And like right now, you know, I keep track of them, and we're working on almost 2.5 months since she had the last one. So we're hoping that we can
knock wood.
Yeah, we can do that.
Does she have any memory of them after, or does it just affect her mental state?
It just affects her mental state. No, she has no memory of them at all. I talk about it, but she has no consciousness of it, of that fact. We just do. They say that there's a couple of things that could be the cause. The brain shrinking overall could be the cause, and then the amyloid buildup in the brain could be the cause of it. So surprisingly enough, there's not a whole lot. You go to a clinic and you can get all wired up, and they can say, oh yeah, she had one, 48 hours ago or whatever, so here's the medicine. Speaking of medicine, they put her on a long name, don't know the name of it. The short name for the drug is called Keppra, and we were on it for 6 months, and I would say that was the worst 6 months of my life in terms of dealing with someone on that medication, and also with Alzheimer's. It just really, really kept the seizures away, but brought a whole host of other things. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Tipa Snow about it, and she made a quote that I'll always remember, is that you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, in terms of taking the medication, because of the side effects are somewhat as bad as the seizures themselves. So we did that for 6 months. I said, I've had enough of that, and we took her off of it, and we're just trying to go through the process of
trying to stretch him out.
What was what were some of the effects from the drug?
Well,
did it make her tired? Was it?
So you can go from tired to agitated to sleepy to, you know, walking around in circles to side pains, muscle twitches. It didn't get really bad until it took away her sleep. She could only sleep about 3 hours a night before she would wake up. Wake up, get up, wanting to go somewhere at, you know, at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And then the one that the doctors got really concerned with was that it started affecting her skin. She started getting a really red rash that she was scratching mm-hmm. continuously, waking her up, scratching. And then, you know, we had the...
Oh, that's so that awful.
You could, you know, really have some serious problems.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It totally, yeah. totally wasn't right for her. Now, I mean, prescriptions are a big issue. And, you know, and so you were talking about, like some men who have Alzheimer's will get agitated and they can put other people at harm because they don't know what they're doing. They don't realize it, but they're, you know, they get aggressive. I have a friend that, whose father is going through that right now. He's probably, well, if we're going to go through the stages, right. I would say he's like stage five,
right.
four or five. And the family keeps getting calls saying, we want to give yeah. your dad Seroquel. It'll be good for right. him and good for everyone else. Well, Seroquel's right. going to make him a zombie, right? And so she's been asking me, what do you think? And I keep saying, it's like putting a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. Right. I mean, that's not what's going to fix it. You know, that's going to right. help them right. more than right. it's going to help him. Because he, you know, that's just part of, that's, there's better ways, there's behavioral ways to handle that. But drugs are so, they should be your last resort if you can do anything else, because especially when you have a cognitive impairment and, you know, I cannot tell you the list of drugs that say right. black label for people with dementia, not good right. for people with dementia, you know, and right. when I say black right. label, that means death. That doesn't just mean bad effects from right. it. It can kill them because it can slow their heart down so much, right?
A lot of the drugs that they give folks to, you know, to keep them from being agitated and combative, unfortunately, actually accelerate the disease. So you're probably taking a year or two off your life.
Yes, it does.
By giving them this drug, and most folks in memory care are either medically or actually physically restrained, and you have to sign off on the fact that that's what you're going to allow them to do. But you know, for us, yes, there's sundowning that takes place. Everybody, you know, listening probably understands that. And for us, after dinner, we hit the streets, hit the carpet, as it were, and we just walk and walk and walk. Most people, because they're inside the apartment or inside the home, they have nowhere to go, so they just kind of go around in circles in their apartment or home. Whereas we will open up the compartment door, out on the corridor, and we are saying hello to everybody that's on their way to listen to the music or play cards or whatever the activity is of the evening, and we enjoy it. I will mention something else that, you know, I'm a backup to something that you talked about in terms of photos. When I wrote the book, one of the things I wanted to do is have something that also journaling helps people, caregivers, by journaling what's going on in your mind and talking about it. That's how I came about with the book. Also, I wanted to be able to share with Catherine. So write the book mm-hmm. first. You have an audio book. We can listen to the audio book. It's something I found, I'm sure everybody knows about this, I just found out from my daughter, is an item called a Fire Stick that you plug into your TV, and then you can download all your pictures onto your TV set. So I have playing during the day when we're indoors having dinner or breakfast or whatever, have some music playing in the background, and then I have a slideshow showing of all the pictures that I've taken over the years. And, you know, she's not sitting here staring at them, but, you know, every now and then she'll look up, she'll see a picture of us, you know, in Berlin, and she'll start smiling because it clicks something in our brain as to, you know, a memory that was there.
And that's that's important because, you know, she's lucky enough to have you there. Most people don't have their loved one living with them in this situation. And that's something that's, you know, it's not going to solve all our problems, but that's something that for the person who's in their room alone all day or, you know, that have something like that, it's a very easy, you know, simple thing to do that, you know, because, you know, most people don't have somebody with them, living with them in the, when they're in this stage.
Right.
So that's a really, that's something that could easily be done. And I think, like you said, even if she just smiles for a minute,
right? And you know the importance of music.
How great!
It's
is
also
that?
Just familiar. It's familiarity. It's awesome. Like I did that for my mom. I didn't have the Fire Stick, but I had a photo frame that had video on it. So I made a slideshow for her with music. Right. So when I couldn't be there, so important. And it just feels familiar, you know, it's familiarity. Even when you're sleeping, if you're hearing a little bit of noise like that, it's soothing if you're agitated or if you're feeling lonely or whatever. So it's so important. It's really important until we change this system. But so are your plans to stay with her to see it all the way through, all the way?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that was one of the promises I made to her. Her dad had vascular dementia, and he only lasted about 2 years. What he decided to do was when they put him in a nursing home, he decided that he was just going to stop eating. That was one of the things that you can control, and you can't take that away from him. He had it in his DNR, and Catherine has that also, no feeding tubes. So I plan on being here, and, you know, we're going to go through this together. Right now, my goal is to keep her walking as long as possible. And, you know, she's in, outside of the Alzheimer's, she's in probably better shape than I am in terms of stamina and all. So we plan on keeping that going as long as possible, try to keep her out of the bed, and then we'll go from there. We can... in this apartment, do everything that we need throughout the decline. There are some folks that you can bring hospice in to the facility. So we've thought all the way through that.
How are you doing?
Well, I tell you what, I found two fabulous ladies that, like I said, come in 3 to 4 hours a day, 4 days a week. I'm spaced out, so they're here at 9, 8:30 in the morning. We finish up breakfast, and then, you know, they play their music, and off they go for 3 to 4 hours. And I can get a lot done. I can go run. I can talk. I can set up appointments and interviews and work on my writing, which I enjoy doing very much. Very cathartic for me to do things like that. And promote the book that the abridged version is coming out May 2nd. You can pre-order now through Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and Books A Million. And I'm really excited about it. I got a new publisher, Morgan James Publishing, which has the same mindset as I do in terms of trying to get this out in front of as many people as possible, because I think our story is very important for folks to think about dealing with Alzheimer's a little bit different. Because, like I said, it's years right now. And this is not something that you're going to get. And so it's a journey, and you have to look at it. And that's what I show in the book, and I talk about as to as many people as I can, and I enjoy doing that. So for me, I'm doing great. I love it here. The food is great. Right now it's, you know, 70 degrees here in Roswell, Georgia, sunny out, and so it's a beautiful day.
Yes.
I can't complain at all.
Wonderful.
So what do you think of the realities of the model that you've created there, of becoming a model for others and other facilities? Do you think it's a reality, or is this some kind of a...
Oh, I think it's a reality, and to the point that is one of the things that I want to talk to as many people as I can. So they have it as an option. It is not for everybody, but they do have it as option. So anybody listening here or anybody reading any of my writings about it, because I actually wrote an article about that transition and how I went through it. Like I said, most folks try to find somebody that's, you know, nearby, you know, where your relatives are nearby. So when you're looking at facilities, the first thing they want to do is they want to get as much money as you as possible. Memory care is the most expensive way they take care of your loved one. Assisted living is the second, and independent living is the cheapest. And it is everything that you need. You have all the activities. You have the ability to have somebody come in and help you watch and take care of your loved one. And you can stay here throughout. And so now folks will be able to go into these facilities and talk about the fact, no, I don't think we're ready for memory care. I don't think we're ready for assisted living. Hey, $8,000-$9,000 a month. You know, I like to have a nice one-bedroom apartment for $3,000. You know, the folks, you know, all the yeah. places here have porches outside and, you know, nice, you know, walking areas. So you can have something to look for when you go out and you're looking at making that transition from the home to somewhere to live. And so I know folks that I've met, you know, wish that they had thought about that, you know, earlier, but, you know, it is what it is. So, but they're talking to their sons and daughters and, you know, grandkids. So hopefully over time it will be something that people can look at as an option, as opposed to just going straight, oh, they've got Alzheimer's, here, we need to put them away. And that's the worst thing for them.
And it takes the burden off their staff too. It helps, you know. It actually is easier when, you know, they have to give less attention, you know, because you're handling so much of it. So it's kind of a win-win in that respect. So.
It's amazing. I love it so much, and I love how happy you are. It makes me happy because and everything you're saying is resonating with me because. My parents, my stepdad and my mom, I say they were like one good person, one almost whole person as they were aging, because my mom had, you know, cognitive impairment, but she was physically perfect. And my stepdad, who was 12 years older, his mind was sharp as a tack. He couldn't hear worth crap. He couldn't see, his eyes were going. And then he ended up using a walker and then a wheelchair. And my mom would be his ears and eyes and his legs, and he would be the brain. So the two of them made almost one whole person, and they were able to live together until he died at these assisted livings. And it was so good because my mom was so happy. And that's, you know, and because they had each other. It's important. Isolation is the worst. We saw that through, you know, COVID and so many people that didn't have cognitive issues that living in long-term or just facilities because they're older,
absolutely,
they need more care. They died from isolation. Isolation is lethal. It's cruel. It's cruel. It's a cruel thing to do to people. So I applaud you, and it's great because hearing you not really having a downside to it is just a beautiful thing. And, you know, it's fantastic. So I just say take Tony as a model, role model. Read his book first, and you'll be moved. You'll love it. You'll laugh, and you'll feel amazing. You'll feel good. You'll feel exhausted.
That's one thing people do come up to me and go, oh my goodness, I'm halfway through your book, but I'm tired. Reading about your, because I make you feel like you're actually running a marathon through some of the.
And also when you're running late to your planes and everything.
Right, right. Or getting stuck in Argentina, and we can go on and on about some of the crazy things.
You'll lose weight while you lose it because you'll feel like you've eaten.
Right. Right.
So definitely go and pre-order this book.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you.
I want to make two shameful plugs here.
Yeah, please do.
You can see my T-shirt here. And there you go, Running with Kat, and that's where you can go, runningwithkat.com. Our race against early onset Alzheimer's, and I'm really, really happy about the new book cover that they put together. Morgan James, they did a really good job there, so I'm looking forward to it hitting the streets. I got advanced copies. Speaking of which, I don't know how you all work this, but they want to contact you or want to contact me, but I'm giving away one autographed advanced copy to whoever you select or you figure out how you want to do
it. Oh, that's awesome. So, okay.
Nice. Very nice.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say.
No, I'm just saying that. I was going to say that, you know, I'm paying for shipping and all that. So all I got to do is either contact me or contact you and you let me know.
Okay. I'm going to put something in the show notes and then we'll figure out something and we'll put it in the show notes and then we'll make that happen. So that's a great offer. That's a really generous offer. Anything else we missed talking about that you wanted to say?
To say goodbye here whenever you all want to close us out.
To give Catherine our love.
I sure will. I'll give him a big hug.
Yeah.
And I'm
big like, hug.
Yeah.
I totally wait. I'm going to do this for when you watch it back. I want to just say, Catherine, I love you. You're amazing. I wish I was there. I'd give you a big hug. And you are a fierce, fierce woman. You are a role model for everybody. And just keep on keeping on. And that's it. I love her. I love, love, love you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Love, love, Don, more love.
Best of luck with you and your.
Thank
best
you.
Of luck with you and your project and you too, Susie.
Thank
Anything
you.
I can do to help, just let me know.
No.
I'm glad we were able to work this out so you guys could be the first ones.
We are the first ones. Yeah, that's because we love you and you love us, and it's all about love, right? Yeah. Don, why is it about
is.
Love?
And you know why?
Right.
You know why?
Why?
You know why? Because love is powerful, love is contagious, and love conquers all. So we thank everyone for watching and listening today. If you like her, or like what you saw or heard, please like, share, follow, do all those fun things. Definitely check out Tony's book, and we'll see you next time. And again, thanks for attending.
Attending.
Take care.
'Kay, this is Susie Singer Carter, and I just wanted to take a minute to talk to you about bed sores. I know, but if you're like I was, you probably don't have a clue what a bed sore really is. Most people don't. I mean, no one told me, and I really just assumed it was part of the body that was, like the name says, sore from laying in one position too long. And if you change the position, all better. Wrong. Bed sore is really a euphemism for more appropriate names, such as pressure wound and decubitus ulcer. Unfortunately, I discovered what a bed sore really was when my mom was admitted into the hospital last year with a stage 4 ulcer. That is the worst level. You don't ever want that to happen. Bed sores can develop quickly and worsen rapidly and can lead to serious health issues, even death. If they're not promptly treated or properly treated, and that includes cleaning and dressing the wound, but most importantly, reducing pressure off the sore by frequently changing the position of the person off of their wound so it can heal. And that can mean propping the person up 30 degrees to the side, far enough to be off the lower back, but not too far as to be on the side hip where there isn't much cushion, right, between the skin and the bone. This is why I'm so excited to tell you about Bedsore Rescue, which was designed by an amazing woman, Gwen Jewell, a nurse who was tired of fooling around with simple pillows and bulky wedges that just don't work. The Bedsore Rescue positioning wedge cushions are uniquely designed to provide ergonomically correct and comfortable support for a sustained period of time without touching the sore. And the curvatures and bilateral angles make it possible for the Bedsore cushion to be used to support many other body parts as well. You can float the heels, you can put it under the head, you can put it under the arms, behind the knees, both sides. You can even use it as a breakfast and bed table. The curvatures of the Bedsore Rescue fit the curvatures of your person's body, and it's made to meet all the patient safeties and bed-bound positioning standards for acute and long-term care facilities. I wish I had it for my mom. I really do. So chances are, if you have a loved one in a long-term care facility or at your home, you may become a pressure injury soldier too. But bedsores should never, never get to stage four. And one way to ensure that they don't is to make sure that as soon as one begins to develop, you keep the pressure off. You can do that easily with Bedsore Rescue. And you can find Bedsore Rescue and many other pressure solutions online at Jewell Nursing Solutions, home of the patented Bedsore Rescue positioning wedge cushions, pads, and pillows. That's Jewell, J-E-W-E-L-L, nursingsolutions.com. And when you use the special code NCFOP, the entire amount of your purchase will go to support our important documentary, No Country for Old People, which chronicles my mother's journey navigating the nursing home long-term care crisis that literally began with an unreported, untreated pressure wound. So take the pressure off yourself and your loved one with the Bedsore Rescue.